today and let one of the gurus introduce you to Vermont's unofficial state car.
Moment of your time for our friends at Jet Service Envelope. If you're looking for an outstanding local printer, make it our friends at The Jet. You can call them at 229-9335. You can get a lot more information, too, if you head to their website, and that's at jetservice-envelope.com. Now, in its fourth generation in the same family, Jeff Blow's running the family business. Dragged one of his kids into the business, too, making it that fourth generation. And a lot different equipment than when they first started out. This is a pretty high-tech operation they have going on over there. Here's the good news. You never even need to visit them because you can get your project done. You can send it over electronically, and then they'll even deliver it for you. So give them a call at 229-9335 and on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. Oh, let me mention one other thing about one of our other sponsors on the program, our friends at the Tailor Shop in Stowe's Lower Village. Mike is on vacation for a bit here, so he is out of town. And I'm sorry because a couple of you had on up there last week because I didn't have ads scheduled for him because he's out of town. But I actually think we probably should have scheduled ads to tell you that he's not there. That's how incredibly important he is. So head up to the Tailor Shop. We'll keep you apprised when he gets back back in business here. All right, we head to the phone. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Chris Graff. Chris was the bureau chief of the Associated Press, also did work with Vermont Public Television, where he did a series on the governors of Vermont. And one of those that he featured was F. Ray Keezer, who, of course, his claim to fame is that he lost the election in 1962 to Phil Hoff. And Chris is kind enough to join us live on the line. F. Ray Keezer passing away over the weekend at the age of 88. Chris, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I am well, Mark. Thanks very much.
So is it fair to say that F. Ray Keezer's claim to fame is what I just said?
Absolutely. It's, he is remembered in history simply for that, for being defeated in 1962 by Phil Hoff, and we see that election as the milestone election on the road from Republicanism, where Vermont was the most Republican state in the nation for over 100 years, to a Democratic state, which is where we are now. And that election that Phil Hoff won in 62 and Ray Keezer lost was the turning point. And, you know, it shows up in so many ways. Every 2 years when people talk about, will someone, challenge the incumbent governor, every reporter at one time or another will say, well, no incumbent governor has lost in Vermont in more than 50 years. Well, the one who lost was Ray Keezer.
What was F. Ray Keezer's reaction to losing?
Well, you know, he said at the time, or at least he said later on, that he thought it was one of the best things that happened to him, that he was welcomed with open arms when he went back to his hometown of Chelsea, and that he was fine with it. My feeling is he was not fine with it. I think he believed that, in effect, there were sort of two levels to that loss, and he understood the historical forces were at work when he lost, because Vermont had been the most Republican state in the nation for a century, and that time for a change is an incredibly powerful theme, as we see at all levels of politics. One day, Governor Keezer was campaigning for re-election in Bennington, and he said, you know, a woman came up to him on the street and said, you know, you've done a great job as governor, but it's time for a change. And Keezer's reaction, this was in that television interview I did with him in 1989, said, what do you do when you're 35 years old and somebody says that to you? And he used to say that he felt he was 104 years old in that campaign because he was carrying on his back a century of unbroken Republican rule. So there's that at one level, but I believe, and this came out in the 89 interview that I did, that he felt, in effect, that election had been stolen from him, and I don't I don't think it was easy for him to accept at the time or over the years. And I was struck in his obituary to read over the weekend that he had just completed his memoirs, and they may in fact be published at a time in the future, and I think that will be fascinating to read, to see, you know, what in retrospect he says about that election.
Wow. When he said stolen, what did you? How did you interpret that?
Well, there are a couple of things, and I think that when we look at that election, we have to say that there were a lot of forces that contributed to Phil Hoff's election and Ray Kieser's defeat, and that some of them were, in fact, related to these forces of history, time for a change, the fact that, you know, in Phil Hoff, you had someone who was young and handsome and reflected the spirit of, at the time, the very increasingly popular president, Jack Kennedy. You know, that election was right after the Cuban Missile Crisis in 62, and Hoff just really was seen as a natural outgrowth of Kennedy's election. So you can't dismiss those overall that overall historic force that was there nationally at the time. But I think that then there's a couple of other factors that led to that defeat in 62, and you just can't dismiss the fact that Ray Kieser had a ton of problems as governor. You know, the legislative session first of all, when he was elected in 60, he was Speaker of the House. He defeated the incumbent lieutenant governor, whose name you'll remember, Mark Robert Babcock. It was a very close primary, fewer than 800 votes between Kieser and Babcock. So, he didn't go in with a lot of support in 1961. But then that legislative session went forever. It was a record 210 days at the time.
Wow.
We think about that. He fought with President Pro Tem Asa Bloomer. There was some real budget issues in that session, and then there was a real controversy at the time, which was the Rutland Railroad controversy. The railroad had been idled by a strike. The president of the company filed for abandonment, and Kieser supported abandonment, and there was a lot of opposition to Kieser's stand. Phil Hoff was against abandonment, and that was a big, messy issue in 1961 and 1962. And then, finally, these are two names, Mark, that you know well, T. Gary Buckley and A. Luke Crisp, two Republicans who were pretty well known in southern Vermont, and they went out and they formed their own party, the Vermont Independent Party, it was called, and they broke away from supporting Ray Kieser in 62, and they supported Phil Hoff. And so that gave Republicans a way to vote for Phil without casting a Democratic ballot. In that time period, actually up until the late 1970s, Vermont's ballots were set up according to party. And so you had a column, you know, that said Vermont Republican Party, Vermont Democratic Party, and a lot of Vermont Republicans were never going to pull the lever for the Democratic Party. But this gave them a way to do that, the Vermont Independent Party. But it also really showed how split the Republicans were, that leading Republicans formed their own political party and backed Hoff.
Wow. We're talking with Chris Graff, who now works at National Life of Vermont, was the bureau chief at the Associated Press, and also did a series on Vermont Public Television. about Vermont's, at the time, living governors back in 1989. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. We were talking about the passing of F. Ray Keezer. You know, I just am thinking to myself how, you know, how mortifying this must have been, and really, in a way, kind of embarrassing. I mean, to be the last Republican governor, I don't know, I would think as years went on increasingly, that would have been a bigger albatross to have around your neck.
Yeah, and, you know, Ray Keezer was of the old school, and I don't know whether you've talked about him at all on the program, but, you know, his father was a Supreme Court justice and was just this remarkable man, also named F. Ray Keezer. And Justice Keezer, he was hearing court cases on the Vermont Supreme Court when he was 91 years old, just a remarkable man. And I think Ray Keezer Jr. Got over his defeat, and over time he became, you know, people, of course, no longer remembered that he had been defeated, and so you would see him endorsing Republican candidates, you know, former Governor Ray Keezer, and people wouldn't know, you know, the backstory there. But he went on, and it was interesting, you know, he had grown up in Chelsea, but after he lost the governorship, he moved to Proctor, which is ironic all by itself, because the Proctor family had run the Republican Party in those 100 years.
Right.
And he became affiliated with the Vermont Marble Company, which was the Proctor company, and over time became their CEO. Governor Keezer worked on a whole number of boards and commissions over the years. He he was actually on the Federal Reserve Board of Boston for a couple years. He served on the board of Union Mutual. He was on the board of Central Vermont Public Service Corporation for a number of years, and I believe he actually even chaired that board. So he stayed very active in public affairs, and I think probably over the long term of his long life, he was probably much more influential in the business community than he was in his 2 years as governor. But to go back to your main point, Mark, I really do think it had to hurt. He was such a rising star. It had to be hard for him because he served in the Vermont legislature in the 50s and became Speaker of the House at, you know, the young age of 31, and then when he was elected governor at 33, he was the youngest person ever to be sworn in as governor at 33, and at that time, 1961, he was the youngest governor in the nation. So he had a lot of attention for that, and his life had been very storybooked that way. So I think that his rise was so fast that it probably had to hit him hard to lose. But I do think over, you know, time, he was able to justify it because of the forces of history being what they were at that time.
God, isn't it remarkable to think that anybody could be elected governor at the age of 33? Wow.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is then 2 years later when Phil Hoff won in 62, you know, everyone looked at Hoff as the young, charismatic, Kennedy-esque person, and he was practically an ancient 38 at the time compared to, Ray Keezer's 33. But yes, it was, you know, and I don't want to take, of course, too much of your time with this, but one of the things that happened that makes it a little more complicated was there was this ladder that our politicians went up for roughly 100 years, and the Proctor machine chose our Republican governors, but it got disrupted in 1958 when Vermont elected a Democrat to the U.S. House, Bill Meyer, and it threw off the whole pattern. So Bob Stafford, who was the lieutenant governor at the time, and then ran for governor in 59, actually ran in 58, served in 59, he decided to leave the governorship to run to defeat Bill Meyer in the U.S. House, and that was not according to plan. So there was really no one ready to run for governor, and Vermont Republicans had always, you know, had somebody ready. And that's why you had that very awkward primary where the lieutenant governor and the Speaker of the House faced each other in that 1960 election.
So you interviewed him in 89. Tell me, what kind of guy was he?
Oh, really nice, person. I tell you, with that series that you mentioned, we let each governor decide where to do their interview. We wanted them to pick a place that was very special to them. And what was fascinating to me was he chose the golf course. And if you watch the opening of that TV show, he and I are riding around in a golf cart because one of the things he did when he then moved back down to the Rutland area was he became very active in the Pittsford Proctor golf course. He designed the back nine of that golf course. He was head of the Vermont Golf Association and was just absolutely passionate. You know, golf replaced politics as his passion. And so, yeah, we did our interview in 1989 in the country club of the golf course because he was so, that to him was something he was just the most proud of, the proudest of.
Yeah, get him in a comfortable setting, too, and maybe they'll open up a little bit more, too, right?
Yeah, and they did. And, you know, he, and that's where I said at the start of this, Mark, that, you know, he did feel that the election was, in effect, stolen from him. And what that was about was just before the election, Phil Hoff held a news conference in St. Albans and said that that what the Keyser administration had announced as a $900,000 surplus for the fiscal year was a monstrous hoax, and that those were the words that Phil Hoff used. And he said that the Keyser administration had deliberately manipulated the state's books, so, in effect, cooked the books to turn a deficit into a surplus. And that was that really made a difference, I think, in the outcome of that election, to have, you know, this very powerful theme of time for a change, that the Republicans had ruled for 100 years. And then someone saying, you know, don't believe the governor. There wasn't a surplus. There was a deficit.
Mm. Wow. All right. Before I let you go, I'm sure you've heard this other sad news, too. I was just blown away over the weekend. Susan Keese of VPR, who's I feel like I just heard her on the radio recently, dying very suddenly after this, some complications from the flu.
And I heard that over the weekend, too. And
How well did you know her? And tell us what you knew about her.
Well, not well, but I certainly respected all that she did with the Rutland Herald and Vermont Public Radio. And I was aware that we were not hearing her reports within the last couple of weeks on Vermont Public Radio. I just, you know, missed them. But I was not, did not know that she was... had these complications from the flu.
Yeah, wow. Man, every day's a gift.
It absolutely. We've learned that the hard way in the last few years, Mark.
Thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure. It's, you know, it's funny to have a governor so young, so 55 years after he dies, 55 years after serving as governor, you know, you don't normally, we will have that with Phil Hoff as well. Phil is still going strong.
Yeah.
But, you know, most of our, you were right in mentioning, you know, most of our governors, so Governor Shumlin's in his 50s, Governor Douglas was in his 50s. That's more the norm today, that you have people who are older or in mid-career, and you don't have somebody who bursts on the scene like a Phil Hoff. So I don't think we'll have many governors in the future who have 50 or 60 years after their time as governor before they die.
Yeah, that would make Shumlin and Douglas, you know, 106 and 108. I'm not sure they want it that fate either.
That's true.
I just saw Phil Hoff a couple of weeks ago, and he looked great. He's turned 90, so he's still chugging along. Amazing.
He is.
Thanks again for your time, Chris.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Take care.
Chris Graff, the former bureau chief of the Associated Press, he did a series back in 1989 with Vermont Public Television where he interviewed all of the, at the time, living ex-governors. And I think, you know, I'll double check, but I'm sure that series is still available up on the web. You can join us on the program this morning. Anything you want to bat around here in our final 15, 20 minutes here, you can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. Toll free 877-291-8255. Maybe you want to go back to our discussion about pot we had first hour. Maybe you have something you want to add to that discussion. A moment of your time for our friends at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery right off of Interstate 89, exit 9 in Middlesex. You could start your day there at 7 a.m., 8 on Sundays, with a fabulous selection of some of the tastiest treats you will find out there. You know, there a lot of people make croissants. A lot of people make, you know, an almond croissant or a chocolate croissant. I swear you will not find a better one than you will find at Red Hen Cafe and Bakery. Not all chocolate croissants were made equal, my friends. Some are clearly better than others. And I would dare say that the ones at Red Hen are truly toe curlers. You could also stop there for lunch. How about one of their fabulous soups they have available each and every day? One always vegetarian. And you could also have some of those great sandwiches they have. They may have pre-made sandwiches that are right there in the cooler for you. They're awesome. But also you could have one of their great sandwiches that they can make for you right there on site, including the best grilled cheese sandwich you will ever have in your life. So stop in now, see them soon. You can also stop there on the way home. Then they close a little early on Monday here, close at 4. So you can head on there any other day of the week. They close at 6. So stop there on the way home. You can pick up a nice one of those nice pizza crusts, pick up some nice cheese, a few other items, and you will look brilliant when you put this meal together because it's not a lot of work. But great meal at the end product there, and it looks like you've been slaving away. So make it Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, right off of Interstate 89, exit 9, and that is in Middlesex. 244-1777, that's our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. All right, let's head up to the Ridge. Fred, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. The lady who you had on earlier is a perfect guest for the opposition of my team, believe me. She knows nothing about ganja. She looks and probably acts like a motherly, grandmotherly type. It's a perfect person to be in the opposition camp. Knows nothing about ganja at all. Never has smoked ganja. You could tell by the way she talked. And what you need to do is have a show with some smokers in there. I'd love to come down and field some calls with you.
Okay.
You know, I am a smoker, and I'm proud I'm a smoker, and I have nothing to hide about it, not embarrassed about it.
Would you want to see it wide open access to this, though?
Certainly. What are they scared of that beautiful little green plant? You know, it's a life giver for some people. For some people, it's not. Mm-hmm. If you want to get real high, you can get real high on ganja. If you want to get just a little sedated, you can. Right now on SeedFinder, there's 6,675 varieties you can choose from. You can find some type of ganja you're going to like.
Do I want you coming the other way on the highway?
Pardon me?
Do I want you coming the other way on the highway?
I'm not talking about smoking it. I'm talking about not smoking it. You don't want me out there smoking it. I don't want you out there smoking it. I don't want you out there on any medication you're not supposed to be on. I don't want kids smoking this stuff. I don't want anybody who's not ready for it, that's not an adult, smoking it.
Okay, if you legalize it, how are you going to prevent that?
You make it so nobody under 21 can smoke it. Well, I mean, come on, it's up to the parents and up to the people bringing the children up to keep them off the substances.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions that she asked me, let me ask you this, because she actually asked this to me sort of on the way out the door, which is that, you know, you've got groups here that have targeted Vermont that are clearly trying to make Vermont a place where it's legal, you know, as sort of part of a lot of these national efforts that happen. What's the harm in doing nothing?
I guess I'm not fielding the question.
Well, I mean, if there's no change in the law as it currently is today, Fred, what difference is that going to make? What difference is it going to make?
Not going to make any difference to me. I don't make any money in the ganja business. That's something that happened to me 30, 40 years ago, and I am just a smoker. And all I can tell you is that it's made a wonderful difference in my life for 40 years. A wonderful difference. You know, my doctor tells me, and he's a big substance abuse doctor in the state of Vermont, we can't find anything in ganja smoke that's bad for you. We can't find anything in there that's bad for you, you know? He said, Greer, I hate to say tell you this more than anybody, but it's not the worst thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And this lady who you had on this morning is the perfect spokesman for the opposition.
Thanks for your call, Fred.
Okay.
Let's head up to Greensboro. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Mark. I have the perfect response to that caller's love of smoke. And that is what I found out after smoking cigarettes for 12 years, from the age of 16 to the age of 28. And I quit after seeing at a National Science Foundation convention in New Hampshire color slides of the effect of airborne particulate matter on our bronchial tubes. You would not believe what a bloody mess we create by smoking or by being in a smoked atmosphere.
Blood? Really?
Absolutely. Wow. Blood and raw tissue. That's what causes cancer, is that constant bombardment that creates the effect. So you get the same thing from smoking marijuana or by being in fires.
Though presumably you're not smoking, you know, you can smoke 20 cigarettes in a day, right?
Well, I'm not sure how many I smoked in any one day, but I was at least a half a pack a day smoker of Lucky Strikes.
I mean, my point is you'd be pouring a lot more tobacco into yourself than marijuana, right? I mean, just smoke volume wise.
I think that's right. But still, there's a cumulative effect of doing it for 30 or 40 years, as this last gentleman was talking about doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's eventually going to cut down your ability to run or to cross-country ski, as it did with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I quit.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it. 244-1777, that's our local number in Central Vermont. You can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Coming up on the program tomorrow, we'll talk with Jeb Spalding. He's the new chancellor of the Vermont State College Systems. And, boy, some really interesting financial challenges that that group is facing. So we'll talk with him about some money and curriculum and other issues as well, too. Wednesday on the program, we'll be joined by St. Mike's professor Bill Grover, who has an update to his book about politics, talking about Senator Bernie Sanders' possible run for president. Boy, he sure sounded last week, to use the popular term here in Vermont, sounds like he's kind of all in, as they say. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. We'll take a quick break. Back after this.
Spring is here. It's a good time to start thinking about those home improvement projects. Glassworks in Waterbury is ready to help. Glassworks can repair or replace your old tattered screens. Remodeling your bathroom? Call Glassworks to set up a consultation for your new shower, tub enclosure, mirrors, and glass shelves. Glassworks technicians are Harvey Installation Master Certified. Call them for information on Harvey Windows and Doors. Glassworks, they're all about glass.
Paid for by the American Beverage Association, a member of Stop the Vermont Beverage Tax.
I'm Pam Tregg, and my husband Guy and I own Quality Market here in Barrie, Vermont. I joined Stop the Vermont Beverage Tax. You should too. This is a real mom and pop store. As a small business, we feel the burden of a lot of the regulations that we're required to comply with. And we face an inordinate number of taxes.
My name is Lindsay Curley, and I am the co-owner of Curley Corporation in Montpelier. Our store is very small. We have a 900 square foot convenience store. As a business owner, I appreciate our loyal customers, and the last thing I want to do is increase their costs when they come to our counter. As a mother, I know my price at the grocery store will increase, and I'm already trying to keep us within our budget. I believe people make good choices based on education and information, not on taxes. Join us at NoVermontBeverageTax.com.
The thought of my sons growing up without me inspired me to quit smoking.
I talked to my doctors, and then I threw away all my cigarettes, ashtrays, and lighters.
I started exercising instead of smoking.
Getting support from friends online kept me on track.
Staying away from alcohol when I was first quitting was key.
Instead of smoking after I ate, I'd get up and take a walk.
I missed having a cigarette in my hand, so I'd hold a pen or a straw, anything.
Until I knew I wouldn't give in to temptation, I spent more time with my friends who didn't smoke.
I went to places that were smoke-free.
I didn't stay quit the very first time I tried.
I kept on trying, and I learned something each time.
Do whatever it takes.
No matter how many times it takes.
I quit.
I quit.
I quit.
We did it, so can you.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
.44-1777 is our local number. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. Interesting piece by John Walters over at the Vermont Political Observer over the weekend. Man, unbelievable. Thank goodness somebody's following what's going on at the Burlington Free Press. Here's, let me just read you this piece here. It's not that long. And I got a story behind the story on this one for you. Wow. Here's the deal here. Under the headline here of Gannett Honors Cashiered Free Press Writer, John writes the following. Oh, this is sad, even by Burlington Free Press standards. Last Friday, the Gannett newspaper chain announced its Best of Gannett Awards for the company's best journalism in 2014. Among the big winners were the Arizona Republic, the Des Moines Register, the Palm Beach Desert Sun, and the Staunton, Virginia News Leader. This being a media awards thing, there were dozens upon dozens of winners. Parentheses, journalism awards are kind of like participation ribbons. I, John Walters, speak as a past winner of dozens myself. Unparentheses. So where, oh, where can the free ploid be? Scroll down, keep scrolling, more, keep going, further, go on. Oh, okay, there. The Free Press's one and only prize is a third-place award in the category of narrative writing slash voice, which aims to honor, quote, powerful and tightly written news and feature stories and any examples of evocative writing regardless of platform. And your winner is, oh, this is embarrassing, John writes, Tim Johnson. Yes, the Tim Johnson who was abruptly fired last fall after 16 years on the job. Gee, somehow the Free Press never bothered to report this great victory. And it's usually so quick to trumpet any honor it wins, no matter how trumped up. Here's a final indignity, John writes. The awards comes with cash prizes. Unfortunately for Tim, the money goes not to the writers, but to their employer. So they give out awards at Gannett to their newspapers for good writing, and then they give the award to the newspaper. I mean, that's just unbelievable. Here's John's final line here. That's Gannett for you, giving the prizes to itself and screwing the talent. So here's the great irony here. Tim Johnson is a neighbor of mine. Just happened to run into the Timster yesterday, and I congratulated him, figuring that would be kind of maybe the half-classy thing to do. He had no idea what I was talking about. So I had to be the bearer of, I don't know whether you call it good news or bad news, but That's the story. All right, let's head to, isn't that just awful? I mean, isn't that just awful? All right, let's go to Corinth. Forbes, how you doing this morning?
Good, how are you today?
Not too bad, not too
great.
Bad.
Great. Your former fellow that was on doing kind of a walk-through history with a former governor.
Yeah.
He failed to mention, too, that in the 60s, Vermont took on a different a makeup, you might say.
Okay.
There's a tremendous movement into Vermont.
All right.
Which I think changed the political.
So the hippies did it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the second part is I just talked with some friends of mine that came back from skiing. And they were talking about the legalization of marijuana in Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And they said that the cost, the regulatory aspect of it, and the tax structure is almost making it prohibitive to buy it through the proper channels so that the black market is still alive and healthy.
Oh, all right. So it's still, all right. So they're not able to undercut the black market.
No, they've made such a bureaucracy out of it and, of course, looking for the tax revenue. That might be something really to discuss here.
Mm, yeah.
But that's the street truth, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
Friends of mine that came back. And
so what do you think about this idea?
Oh, boy. That's a toughie. The war on drugs, of course, that failed because of the intercompetition between the agencies. None of them wanted to, all wanted to get the glory of it. And of course, there was a lot of money involved, overtime and everything else, so that thing was a disaster from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know. I know it's everywhere. If you go to a party, you go out socially or anything else, everybody's smoking. So inevitably, I think it's probably going to come down. I think the votes will be there.
Mm-hmm.
And as to the only positive thing I can see out of it is that nobody's, if it comes through and is manufactured the proper way, nobody's going to be playing with it. Nobody's going to be adulterating it to a point where it kills people. And that's usually where people get killed.
You know, I remember there were stories, I'm trying to remember if it was more the 70s, 80s, or when it was, but boy, you know, the number of people that would have marijuana that was laced with stuff like PCP.
Right.
And Angel that stuff, does. Yeah, I mean, that stuff, I mean, people would do just the wackiest. I mean, you know, I never hear about that anymore.
No, I don't know why, other than the fear of, killing somebody, and then now you're really on the line. But during Prohibition, bathtub gym, everything, people went blind, died, toxins, battery acid, strychnine. I mean, everything was thrown into it until they legalized it, and then the quality of it became somewhat sane.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that seems to be one of the arguments that proponents like our first guest, Jack Cole, was making today, that if you corral it and control it and then regulate it and somehow you can, you can manage the amount that's in it of THC and all this stuff. I don't know.
That part's true. But the next thing is, what kind of bureaucracy are you going to create out of doing that?
Yeah.
Makes it prohibitive cost-wise.
Yeah.
And keeps your black market healthy and alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a balance point, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Forbes.
Right on.
Appreciate your call. 244-1777. That's our local number in Central Vermont. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. A moment of your time for our friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for an outstanding local internet service provider, make it our friends at gmavt.net. You can call them toll free at 1-888-321-0815. That's 1-888-321-0815. And you can also find them on the World Wide Web. And that would be at jetservice-envelope.com. You know, it's interesting. Over the weekend, there were a number of events happening down in Selma talking about 50 years ago, Bloody Sunday, and the quite the famous march that really many say was one of the sparks in the civil rights movement. And there was discussion yesterday. There were a number of, you know, political speeches honoring this. And one of the things that the president asked yesterday was about this whole idea that we have an obligation as citizens to vote in elections. And that, you know, so many of us don't use that and don't exercise that right. You know, and here we are, you know, we're spending gobs and gobs of money and giving up lives and having people come home and suffer. In large part, you know, a lot of our effort across the world is to try to emancipate people in such a way so that they're liberated from oppression, quote unquote, so that they can have a right to vote. And you look at some of these countries, you know, you look at places like, you know, Iraq, when they finally had the vote. I mean, my God, I mean, people, well, and in Africa, when South Africa finally had the right to vote for president, I mean, honest to God, people would walk for days to exercise their right to vote. And, you know, in this country, it is alarming. I mean, we had the last election in New York State was something to the tune of 28% of the people voting. I mean, it was something, you know, outrageous. So one of the things that the president talked about is how do we so casually discard the right for which so many fought? That was one of the things that he talked about. And in a column in today's Washington Post, E.J. Dionne raises this question that actually House Speaker Shab Smith raised and then dropped like a hot potato when he realized just how, you know, what a hand grenade it was. But this whole idea of compulsory voting, you know, there's, and then people will point to what's happened in Australia. And it was interesting. I looked up a little bit here. Here's what they do when you're in Australia. You are required to vote, and if you, unless you have, there's a number of excuses that you can have that you can get out of it. But for the most part, you're basically required to vote, and it's compulsory for all eligible Australian citizens to enroll and then vote in the federal elections. And so what you say to yourself, well, Mark, what happens if you don't vote? They scoop these people up and put them in Guantanamo or whatever. So here's what happens. You get a ticket. You get a $20 ticket, and you get a letter sent to you with the ticket. And then you need to provide some sort of valid or sufficient reason for failing to vote. Or you have to show proof that you actually voted. If you blow that off, you could be fined up to $170. You can get a criminal conviction. So, you know, and they apparently, I'll get the numbers for you for tomorrow, but apparently they're the number of people that vote, I mean, it's just, it's off the charts. So I don't know. I mean, you know, how do we live in a country where we all like to participate in democracy and then, you know, people don't vote? I mean, it just seems so odd. I understand some of the reasons that you feel powerless and all that. We'll pick up this thread tomorrow. Thanks for joining us on the program today. Have a great rest of the day. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren and the flagship AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is next.